Okay, so today is November 11th. And I'll read you the discourse from the Zen teachings of Master Lin Chi. And actually, I referred back and forth between the two books for this discourse. Through the talks over the past year, I've almost primarily used Watson's book, but there's a place in this particular translation that I think he's mistaken, and it's a very crucial place, and it's on a very small word. It's on either using not getting or non-getting. And Thich Nhat Hanh uses the word attainment, and that's not the problem. It's the not attaining or non-attaining. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. So I'll just read you the beginning question and answer of the discourse. A monk asked, "What was Bodhidharma's intention in coming here?" The master replied, "If he had an intention, he would not even be able to save himself, let alone bring others to the shore of awakening." A monk asked, "If he had no intention, how could the second patriarch have attained awakening?" The master replied, "Attainment is non-attainment." Then the monk asked, "If attainment is without attaining, how can without attaining have any meaning?" The master replied, "It was because the second patriarch went looking for mind everywhere and could not stop that Bodhidharma said, 'Good heavens, what a gentleman. How come you keep looking for a head when you have a head already?' When we hear that sentence and are able to shine the light on our mind, we never go in search of anything anymore. We know that our body and our mind are no different from the body and mind of the masters and the Buddhas. And right away we can realize the state of having nothing more to do. That is what can be called realization." You know, and then the discourse goes on from there. But I think maybe breaking apart those initial questions and answers make the rest of the discourse, which you can look at on your own, much more clear. This, what was Bodhidharma's purpose in coming from the West, is a stock question. I imagine Lin Chi took his seat in front of the assembly and said, "So, does anyone have any questions or comments?" And the room was thunderously silent in response. Maybe this went on for some moments, but more likely, silent time lengthened, and Lin Chi continued to stare out at his assembly, maybe casting his eyes about and locking with each student. Finally, someone either became too anxious or became quite courageous and broke the silence with a well-worn question. "This question is like asking, what is Buddha? Or what is the meaning of Zen?" In my mind, the trap with a question like this is that because it is worn and used up, almost a cliché, it would be easy to respond in a tired and worn out way. In a very real sense, it is easy to stay stimulated and fresh in ever-changing circumstances. But how do you live anew with brushing your teeth each morning? How do you live anew with having breakfast with your longtime partner, and then maybe making the same trip to work that you've been making for years? And how do you involve yourself in the same mundane tasks? How do you stay awake arising at 5 o'clock every morning and sitting for 2 hours, having breakfast, then doing work for 90 minutes and sutra recitation. How do you stay awake day after day? That is the trap of a well-worn question. Can you meet it? Can you meet yourself anew? When you are asked for the 10,000th time, how are you? How was work? What's for dinner tonight? How do you respond? Anew or with worn out cliches? When Zhao Zhou was asked, what is the purpose of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? He replied, cypress tree in the garden. The questioner didn't catch Zhao Zhou asleep. However, I'm not saying your response to an everyday question needs to be wildly imaginative and original. But I am saying each question, how are you? How was your day? That's the presentation of a Dharma gate. These mundane, everyday queries are Dharma questions, and they're each invitations to practice using intimate language. Language, whether with words, or with your eyes or body. Intimate language that does not create a subject, an object, and a separate activity. Intimacy invites the absence of distance, or you could say it invites closeness and unity. Intimate language is unitive language, or in Buddhism we might say, I suppose, non-dual language. So a question, how are you? Where are you coming from? It's a Dharma gate, and it is inviting you to respond from within the language, within the experience of non-duality. A monk asked Zhao Zhou, what is the purpose of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? Zhao Zhou said, cypress tree in the garden. Lin Qi said, if he had a purpose, he wouldn't have been able to save even himself. What would you have said? I would have said, I'm a little hard of hearing today. Could you come a little bit closer? I wonder what you'll say the next time you are asked a question that you have responded to 10,000 times before. Again, as I said, it needn't be wildly imaginative nor original, but it needs to be intimate, exhausting yourself, showing everything about you when you respond. So the questioner continued on. He said, if he had no purpose, how did the second patriarch manage to get the Dharma? Lin Qi said, attainment means non-attainment. And I'll talk about that in a little bit, this attainment means non-attainment. The monk is asking or saying, if Bodhidharma had no purpose, if he truly had no intention, how did he end up with a student, and how did the student attain the Dharma and become Bodhidharma's successor? The monk is saying there seems to be a lot of purpose and intention here. Shit doesn't just happen. There are no coincidences. So what gives? What do you mean he had no purpose? What do you mean he had no intention? Aiken Roshi writes, quoting the physicist Paul Davies, in his explanation of origins. Paul Davies writes, mostly quantum events occur at the atomic level. We don't experience them in daily life. On the scale of atoms and molecules, the common sense rules of cause and effect are suspended, and things happen simultaneously for no apparent reason. Aiken continues on musing, why should there be one natural law for us and another for the atoms and molecules that make us up? In actual fact, things happen simultaneously for no apparent reason right here in our dimension of cause and effect. There is a natural harmony and something even deeper than that, and it is called intimacy. I was writing this section of the talk in the evening and realized it was 9:45 and the horses needed to move from the far field to the paddock. As I left the house, the monk's comment continued to ring in my ears. How could there be no purpose? How no attention when someone shows up and becomes, over time, a Dharma successor? As I stumbled over the darkened gravel path and came out from under the fir boughs, the moon, full and golden, rose from behind the back shoulder of the mountain on the south end of the valley. The path at my feet brightened, and the trees and bushes stood up into the light and dark. I wondered still about purpose, and wondered if Bodhidharma's mind of moonlight simply cast a glow on the ground path, on the gravel path, for anyone to see and follow, just as the sky's mind of moonlight was doing for me. So what was his intention? You mean he had no purpose at all? Of course, at the beginning of practice, and maybe at the beginning of each day, we need to have a purpose. We need an intention. It is the compass we set our travel by. The rest of the day is influenced if first thing in the morning we state our vow to save all beings, to be kind and generous, to be warm-hearted, to wake up. Any of those intentions will do, or you can find your own words. What is your intention each morning as you come to sit here in Sesshin? In this very moment, as you listen, what is your intention? If in the first thing of the morning we do Zazen, we can then set the rest of the day by that compass bearing. And the compass is even more finely tuned if we then follow up our vow and our Zazen with morning chanting of purification, or the five remembrances, or the discourse on love. Aiken Roshi used to respond to the question, how much purpose, how much intention or effort is necessary, saying, just enough to get you to the Zendo. And then after the first bow at the entrance, let it go. Let everything go. That, of course, does not mean we won't be tossed about like a small boat out in today's weather on the water. And it certainly doesn't mean we'll be perfect, but it does mean the moonlight of our own minds and bodies will, when necessary, illuminate the path of our lives. And what is important will alight, and what isn't important will fall away. So now in this discourse, after he asks about purpose, the master says in Watson's book, getting means not getting. In Thich Nhat Hanh's book, he doesn't use the word not. He says it's non. And I think that's an important distinction. So what do you imagine the significant differences between not getting or not attaining and non-getting or non-attainment? Watson is saying if you get the Dharma, you actually don't get it. If you attain the Dharma, you actually do not attain it. And this is true. But Thich Nhat Hanh's translation points to a more subtle and insightful fact. Attainment is non-attainment. This translation refers to the paradox set up by Watson, getting is not getting. But it also resolves it. We know Zazen is not about sitting on the cushion thinking. But it also is not about sitting here and not thinking. This only concretizes the realm of duality. Do I think or not think? Do I attain or not attain? Is it good or bad? Black or white? This is the way of being thrown about by the wills of the wind, and we have no way to ever truly settle and find peace. The way of Zazen is not to ignore the world of duality. That actually would just reinforce it. But the way of Zazen is to find liberation within the dual world. We find relief within our conditions, not by grasping or avoiding them. The way of Zazen is in the middle of thinking and not thinking, and we call that non-thinking. The mind is still active. It's just that our normative associations and reference points have been unhinged, and we see and express with a vaster mind. We see through the paradigm of subject, object, and activity. What is non-thinking? Dogen says it is the Dharma gate of ease and joy. We could also say it is the robin singing from a branch of the heart. Or we could say it is the wind blowing across the sky of our very own minds. We can also say it is the moonlight of our own night sky leading us up the path to take a pee. We can also say it is a friend's last breath blowing through our own nostrils. So what is non-thinking? Another short and simple definition is simply intimacy. Not thinking is dullness. Thinking is much too active. Non-thinking or non-attainment is intimacy. This is the path that Lin Chi keeps pointing to and showing us in each discourse. It is the way of nothing to do. It's the way of nowhere to go. It's the way of nothing to depend on. Intimacy. Right here before your very eyes. Okay, thank you.